This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, let's talk about pancakes. They were analyzed. And what did they find out, Celia?
Well, this is one of those kind of placemark cases for me, because when I first came across the Symington encounter, I was very much into conventional ufology, you know, the nuts and bolts saucers, the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And so when I heard that the pancakes had been identified as being comprised of purely terrestrial materials, I immediately said, cover up. I was like, the Air Force got a hold of these, you know, genuine space pancakes, and they just couldn't have it come out that they were actually made out of, who knows, Martian moon dust or whatever. So they replaced them with these normal, boring terrestrial pancakes. Obviously, my outlook has matured a little bit since that time, because it's true, the pancakes came back as being comprised out of earthly materials, specifically wheat hulls. I think there was like a hydrogenated fat of some sort. Other different types of grains were mixed in. And interestingly enough, too, barring any concerns about, you know, alien viruses or radiation poisoning, Symington actually tasted one, and he said that it tasted like cardboard. So there's also that. Now, interestingly enough, though, I still view these pancakes as one of the most intriguing aspects of this encounter, because if you look at what happened at the time, when it came back that these were earthly pancakes, even though they weren't pancakes as anyone would enjoy them, they were these just bizarre, again, like perforated, almost cracker-like biscuit things. Everyone dropped this case. It was signed off as psychological. The UFO research groups really kind of dropped their interest in it. And Symington was branded as, you know, someone who had had some sort of bizarre hallucination that he then acted out by making these pancakes, which, of course, led to him just being done with the whole thing and saying that he would never come forward again with further encounters.
Let me throw something out before you go on with explaining this. And that is, we assume that anything alien, and I'm not saying this was alien, there are a lot of other things we can talk about, and I know you will. We have been looking at extrasolar planets, and they seem to have similar structures to what we have at Earth. So the content of ingredients and minerals and all that could be very similar to what we have here. So, for example, if we examine a spaceship and it's made of some kind of common alloy, we can say, well, it can't be alien because we could produce it ourselves. But maybe those beings who live on other worlds are using the same elements that we do. Zelia, go ahead about the pancakes.
Absolutely. I mean, that is definitely an option. The other option, too, the thing that I have now kind of my personal stance on it is that if you look at this case as an isolated UFO encounter, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, why would, if we're looking at this in the extraterrestrial hypothesis, why would alien beings from an advanced civilization need to trade water in the first place? Why would they then give out these alien pancakes? And yeah, why would they be comprised of earthly materials? Obviously, there's a few different explanations as to how that would be. However, if we look at this in the much more long-running historical and folkloric sense, this encounter 100, 200 years ago actually can be found in a completely different belief system, and that is the fairy faith. Surprisingly enough, and this was mainly pointed out by Jacques Vallée in Passport to Magonia, even the fact that they were these flat bread or cake-like materials, that is consistent with dozens of encounters with the good folk or the fairies, where people would often trade water specifically for flatbreads. It's a very intriguing concept that we have effectively the same encounter that would have occurred maybe 200 years ago in a different cultural backdrop, being described in a different sort of taxonomy and a different belief system, almost modernized in the case of Joe Symington.
Another connection to these old stories is that the Symington pancakes were completely devoid of salt,
yep,
which was foreboding for the Fae.
Yep, the good folk could taste of no salt, yeah. That, too, is in Passport to Magonia, and that did make, well, it didn't make an appearance. Salt did not make an appearance in Symington's pancakes.
The point being here is that we view this phenomena in terms of the modern culture, which is the point that things like this may have happened hundreds of years ago, where ingredients, cakes or cookies are handed to Earthlings by their visitors. Here we see it in science fiction terms. But again, exactly. We're looking at the phenomenon in terms of our present culture.
Yeah, and the intriguing thing is that it always seems to be just a little outside of our grasp. The fairies, of course, were supposed to have these magnificent feats of magic and these magical abilities, and that explained how they were able to vanish. That explained how they were able to fly around. That explained all of the things that were then unexplained. And then in our modern culture, we see these magnificent space beings, you know, coming from usually utopian societies. I know there are some exceptions to that, in their fantastic vehicles, the very thing that we are reaching for. Interestingly enough, too, there's a sliver of time, especially at the turn of the last century, where we saw this motif kind of more of the airship and the mystery inventors. There's a lot of yellow journalism about that at the time, but there did seem to be some genuine reports where people were claiming to see these miraculous airships. And, of course, that was right before flight as we understand it. So it really seems as though there's some mechanism at play here which is able to kind of show us something that we can grasp but we can't quite reach. That's how it appears to me, at least.
In other words, the term is one step beyond. On the other hand, you have to look back at the 1890s, and maybe in some cases there were lone inventors who were inventing something which was only slightly advanced from our technology, and they were testing it. So how could you know at this point?
Yeah, sifting through that, I mean, it's such a mix of there's a potential for that. There's a potential for, of course, journalistic hoaxes. And then there's, you know, pretty much the same sort of thing that we see today that was simply explained away as the airship. You know, people talking about these strange lights that were moving at high rates of speed and making 90-degree turns. You know, so, I mean, that's exactly what we see today with the UFO phenomenon. It's just that at that time, they just explained it as the airship regardless of how it looked, just as we today will explain things as, you know, whatever we believe UFOs are. I mean, the flying saucer concept obviously has been modernized quite a bit in recent years, but I don't feel like we've really moved much past that. I do see a tendency, though, people are looking into the more interdimensional concept, and I just have to wonder if we try and cement that narrative, you know, I don't know. I think the truth is something a lot more vague than that.
Well, I should also point out that you're referring to the turn of the century airship sightings. There were also a couple of cases where people would run across these landed craft and were asked to bring water.
Yes.
For the occupants. So, again, there's that, similar connections to Symington and other more modern UFO cases.
The really interesting thing, too, is that in some of these places where effectively, you know, an airship flap instead of a UFO flap was occurring, you also had sightings of wild men. Of course, you know, pretty much Bigfoot encounters or even mystery panthers or strange dog-like creatures popping up at the same time. So, really, just an intriguing, intriguing thing.
Now, that's one of the aspects of the whole phenomena that fascinates me is, and especially you look at, say, like Stan Gordon's investigations in Pennsylvania and the connection with UFO sightings and other cryptid creatures, not just Bigfoot, but just a whole pantheon of bizarre things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is that whenever there is a flap of any activity, too, it doesn't really stay in its bounds. I've noticed even with UFO flaps, it's not like it's ever just, you know, I mean, sometimes there's many, many sightings of one thing, but very often there'll be a sighting of something that looks like a conventional flying saucer. There'll be sightings of things in the sky. There'll be sightings of, cryptids. It all kind of just bleeds one into the other. You know, it doesn't really stay in its conventional categories, and that is just simply phenomenal.
Now, when people ask you, you know, and think that, you know, maybe that, because I know that you used to be a member of MUFON.
Yes.
Did you get any grief because you were also interested in cryptozoology? You know, because a lot of people who are UFO investigators, I mean, that's it. There's no, you know, there's a clear mark. There's UFOs, and then there's that crazy stuff that we're going to ignore.
Well, let's not ignore these announcements. More to come with Zelia and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
One of the 27 and a half voices that Tim Swartz specializes in, when he does the quarter voice, that's between the half and the full, you know, with a three-quarter voice.
Oh.
You asked a question of Zelia. Would you continue with that? Or Zelia, will you have a response?
Sure thing. So I feel very lucky because my dealings have been overwhelmingly positive in the paranormal field. Regarding specifically MUFON, when I joined on, I was very invested in the concept of conventional ufology. And so that's why I decided to become a field investigator and from there assistant state director and then state director for a very short time. And eventually, I never had any specific complaints against my particular brand of research. It was kind of more just a matter of me realizing that if I wanted to devote more time and energy to that, I'd probably have to do that on my own time. So that is why I ultimately decided to leave MUFON, was just because, I did want to look into this entire field as possibly interrelated to, everything else. Because there do seem to be patterns that exist between these different types of phenomena. So, for the most part, I have had a few people, randomly, obviously very invested in a particular theory, people who think they have the answer, quote unquote, who don't seem to be too pleased with what I have to say, but it has been overwhelmingly positive, so I feel really fortunate for that.
Did you encounter any of the criticisms that have been leveled against MUFON?
Boy, it was an interesting time there, I will say that much. And before I continue with that thought, I will say that I do think a lot of the field investigators, most of the people I dealt with, really, are in it for the right reason. They want to figure out what's going on. So the people I dealt with personally were, for the most part, again, very positive. I will say that it was kind of a chaotic time that I was affiliated with them. And again, I kind of get the years all bleed one into the other. But there was definitely a lot of shifting going on in, the upper kind of red tape bureaucracy of it. A lot of projects that were promised that never really happened. So it was interesting. I can see how, people get a little paranoid, specifically in the field of ufology, just how things are dealt with. I don't think there was any malevolence there at that time, but, when stuff just kind of gets shifted around and there's no real reason as to why, it's just funny to me when you have a field that is kind of, whether rightly or wrongly, affiliated with the very Fox Mulder type paranoia and, people who kind of like think in those terms. I find it interesting that you wouldn't just catalog, be like, well, this is why this is happening and this is why so-and-so left and this is why this is no longer a thing. It was all just very like, oh, what now?
Well, we have a situation here where a long time international director was fired because he got into a legal problem that we shan't mention, and his predecessor replaced him. But there was also a situation here where a state director back east was putting posts on Facebook that were racially toned. In other words, a guy was writing racist creeds, racist stuff, and there was a big question about how they dealt with that person. And so there's this personnel issue where things like that should not impact what a UFO group does. But if you have an individual of prominence with the organization doing stuff that isn't very nice, then it reflects on the organization. And so the other question, of course, is that there have been issues where MUFON has run into issues, run into problems. Like, for example, in the early 2000s, they made a deal with Robert Bigelow, who we didn't know at the time, was sitting on $22 million cash he got from the Pentagon's UFO program. It went to him. And he contacted MUFON about them doing investigations, and then there was some kind of dispute over that they downplay, at least Dr. Kelleher, who was one of the people involved with Bigelow's organization, downplays. But James Carrion, who was head of MUFON at the time, said that basically Bigelow wanted to take the stuff and keep it for himself, basically buy the sightings for himself and not let MUFON publicize them. So this is really things before your time, most likely.
The first set of issues was after my time. And I know when I saw, because all of that news that you mentioned was, that was like 2020, 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So that was well after my time. And I was very shocked and surprised by that.
Well, it's interesting here, the guy who took over, McDonald, took over as the head of MUFON, which is the position he occupied earlier. He made a living by running these mile-high flights. where people go up in airplanes and have fun. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. They're adults. They have a right to do what they want. But after the kind of scandal they had, you think, couldn't they have picked somebody else? I mean, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. You couldn't write this stuff, honestly.
You couldn't make it up.
No, you really couldn't. But no, yeah, I did. I heard of the whole the Bigelow thing that you mentioned as well, and I thought that was intriguing and a little weird. And I know that by the time I left, another reason that I left was because there was a lot of confusion with how cases were being distributed and who was able to handle them. And, you know, I don't have, like, the hard and fast info on that, so I'm not going to talk too deeply about it. But I know that it was enough to seem weird to me. And so that was definitely a contributing factor into how why I decided to depart as well.
You know, there was an article in the Washington Post about MUFON, and this came out after the news of the Pentagon investigations. And they focus on this one lead investigator who basically screwed up his life completely because of UFOs. So therefore, he's working like a night watchman or janitor or something at a school. He was getting these low-end jobs. His marriage was ruined because of his UFO interests. And it made it look like, well, the people who are really involved and invested in UFOs are just wacky fringe people who can't exist in normal society. And basically, by having that guy with that background in a high position that should be a position of respect, reflected on the organization. Oh, they just attract weirdos.
Yeah, I know that's part of the biggest thing that I think anyone really interested in the paranormal faces is that, you know, people really do just, you know, once you mention that, again, some people totally are cool with it. A lot of people that I've met have had an experience or two, and so they want to talk about it. But every now and again, it's like you'll just mention it, and they do. They think they wait for you to pull out the tinfoil hat and say that the Venusians are listening to your thoughts. And there's such a stigma, too, even against, you know, the terminology of the paranormal. And to that regard, I had an aunt, actually, doesn't believe in any of this stuff. So we told her because for a time my sister had a commute of like an hour, and this was before my sister could drive. She's a professional ballet dancer. And so we would see, you know, because we were driving extensively on this road, we had a few UFO sightings. And so we mentioned it to my aunt. She just poo-pooed the whole thing. And then she drove my sister in one night, and they had a sighting. And when they got back, my mom kind of was, you know, sort of giving her a time about it. And so she was like, well, hey, you know, so what did you see? And my aunt was like, well, it was something in the sky and we don't know what it was.
We know what this was. And that's coming up in a moment with Zelia and Gene and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A massive blizzard is hitting the Northeast, causing power outages in the region and forcing cancellations of thousands of flights. The storm pummeled New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts, where snowfall rates of 1 to 2 inches per hour are being recorded. Tens of millions of people are under winter weather alerts, stretching from the mid-Atlantic to New England. Wind gusts are reported up to 40 miles per hour, but they're expecting more along the coast. Over 10 million people in the Northeast are under blizzard warnings. The National Weather Service is warning that the nor'easter could bring near-record snowfall and blizzard conditions to most of New England. Power outages are widespread, and thousands of flights have been canceled due to the storm. This is USA Radio News. Juliana Michelle Childs, a federal judge for South Carolina since 2010, is now under consideration to fulfill President Joe Biden's campaign pledge of placing the first black woman on the Supreme Court. The White House confirmed that Childs, who House Democratic Whip James Clyburn has championed, was one of Biden's potential picks. Childs is the first publicly confirmed name under consideration to replace Justice Stephen Breyer, who announced he would retire at the end of the court's current term, which runs through June. Joni Mitchell said Friday she would remove her music from Spotify in protest after recent controversy between Neil Young and the music streaming giant over podcaster Joe Rogan's COVID-19 misinformation. Mitchell released a message saying, "I stand with Neil Young." She's the first major artist to follow Young in leaving Spotify. You're listening to USA Radio News.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
So, Zelia Edgar, you were telling us about your aunt, and she saw something strange with your sister, and she would not use the term UFO. Is that correct?
Not at all. I mean, and it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, I know that, you know, it's been mixed up a lot in the public eye, but to say UFO does not mean I saw a little green man flying a flying saucer. It just means that you saw an object that was unidentified that happened to be in the sky. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion on, you know, whether it should be changed to UAP or whatever. And, you know, I do think that unidentified aerial phenomena probably is a better term because so many of these things are so much more vague than simply an object. But regardless, you know, even that admission, the terminology was just too much for her. So, and you do, you see that stigma a lot that, you know, anyone interested in this field is just some total wacko nut job.
Well, you know, it all started out in the early days. These were flying saucers because of the identification of the Kenneth Arnold sighting, which is more ellipsoid. Mm-hmm. But they moved like saucers skipping across water, and therefore a reporter said flying saucer. So yep. In the early 50s, Project Blue Book, the fellow who was head of it, Captain Ruppelt, said UFO. Make them look respectable, unidentified flying objects. We're not calling them spaceships. We're not saying what they are. It's just that we don't know. And that sounded fair until UFO became a treacherous term because of its overuse by lots of fringe people, which is why we have UAP today. Now, I should point out, this is something maybe you hadn't heard of, in the early days, from the 50s on for a few decades, there was an organization called APRO.
Mm, yep.
By Carl and James Lorenzen, and yep. They call them UAOs, unidentified aerial objects, again to escape the UFO and flying saucer designations, or just look different but it wasn't adopted by anybody else. I should point out that MUFON was basically a spin-off of presumably disgruntled APRO members. That's how it started.
Yeah, I think I did hear about that. And yeah, the old APRO bulletin, man, they have said, I found a website online that has a lot of those available, and they had just such fantastic encounters because the Lorenzans really seemed to be the first ones to start discussing the concept of the occupants. And again, whether that's really a correct term or not, who's to say? But the beings associated with, you know, these objects. So
I had some encounters with the Lorenzans. He was a really nice guy. She could be crusty.
Oh.
I don't want to say more. I didn't like her. I didn't like her because she didn't like me. It worked out that way.
Ah, there we go. That is a fan. I'm going to use that the next time I find someone that is a bit disagreeable. They're just crusty.
Right. Well, it was. You know, she had this kind of attitude about me because we had an issue 10 years earlier when I put something in a UFO magazine. She felt she hadn't gotten the proper credit, and she asked me to send her $100 in 1965 dollars, which is like, you know, $700-$800 today.
No, oh, geez.
I'm just a kid going to school, and you're asking me for $100. And as I said, once again, consider what that is in today's dollars, and I'll give you the figure in a moment. But that was very, very unfortunate. And by the way, APRO's files apparently were left in someone's garage, and they won't let outside researchers look at it. Because forgetting the attitude of the management, they had some great work there.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's unfortunate, though. Just imagine having that wealth of information and being like, well, no one's getting in here except the mice.
Oh,
yeah, that's probably what will happen, too, is that they'll just deteriorate over the years.
One of my favorite quotes, just thinking about all of the, you know, kind of different conflicting personalities and stuff, Keel, when he said the saucer hunters and their drama, I know that stuck with me for years.
Sometimes he'd call it ufology. Oh, by the way, I looked up, $100 in 1965 is worth $885 today, 2022. Ooh. So, therefore, she was asking me for the equivalent of $885.
Oh, wow.
Think about that.
That's no good.
And she remembered you 10 years later.
That's right. I was at a UFO convention in 1975. And I'd had some disputes with Richard Hall, who was, in the 60s, the office manager at NICAP, Major Keogh's organization. And we looked at each other, we shook hands, we had a pleasant conversation. I'm only sad that when the Paracast debuted, we didn't get a chance to interview Richard Hall before he died. Ditto with John Keel. We actually almost got Keel. My former co-host got Keel's number from Tim Beckley. So he calls up Keel, and Keel says, "Who gave you that number?" and hangs up on him.
Oh, my gosh.
I should have made the call because I knew Keel and had a friendly association with him. But unfortunately, we didn't think of that. Yeah.
Oh, man. And again, when I rediscovered Keel, it was when I was late teens. And I remember I was reading, first I read Mothman Prophecies, and then I got to Operation Trojan Horse and then The Eighth Tower. And at that time I was reading and I was like, man, he sounds just done with this field. Like, you know, he's writing these books and meanwhile he's just like, this is just all just stressful and terrible and don't get involved. And there I was, this young kid, absolutely getting involved. So I did not heed his warning.
You're a rare breed, because I think most younger people don't get involved in UFOs in a traditional way, which you did. You, of course, you have a YouTube channel, which is common nowadays, but you wrote a book. And you've got to think, that's very different. I thought before I saw your picture and everything, okay, it's a normal person in her 40s or 50s or something. And looking at your age, do you think that maybe you're a throwback a little bit in your attitude?
I hope so. For some reason, I just gravitate towards, I kind of look at it as like the golden age of, you know, not just ufology, but also just all of this kind of weird anomalous stuff of like the late 60s and the 70s. You know, I gravitate towards a lot of those cases. It seems as though there was just a real stroke of weirdness that existed at that time. So I hope so. I hope I'm kind of a throwback. I term my book as kind of eclectic and retro. So I hope that comes through.
Do you listen to Beatles music?
Not the Beatles, but I do listen to a lot of other 70s music, like David Bowie, Black Sabbath, that sort of thing.
Ah, okay. So it's one step beyond the Beatles. Because a lot of that stuff started with the Beatles, like Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
By the Beatles, written primarily by Paul McCartney, because he wanted to make the loudest recording he could make. And that influenced heavy metal very much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but no, that era to me is just, you know, sometimes I wonder if I was born at the wrong time, but then I'm like, whatever, here I am.
Let's get in that time machine and go back.
I know, right? My thing is, if I had a time machine, there's two times that I would definitely go to, and one is the 90s, so I could actually watch the X-Files week by week, because I consider myself an X-Files fan from before I was born, because my mom actually watched it while she was pregnant with me. And then, of course, to the 70s, just to be there, you know, when all of these weird cases were coming about. But, of course, then, too, I'd have to go back to the 60s for the entire Point Pleasant affair, and then I'd probably just end up time traveling for my entire life. So, who knows? It's probably a good thing I don't have a time machine.
Now, 1973 was a real interesting year. I was working as news director of a radio station just outside of Philadelphia, and I was starting to read about UFO sightings again. And then, of course, October 11th, 1973, you know what I'm talking about. I should point out that you refer, of course, to Calvin Parker at age 18. We've had him on the Paracast a couple of times, and I ask our listeners to check our archives and listen to him remembering this so many years later. Let's talk about the Pascagoula abduction, because you're framing it in a way that relates to Kiel.
Absolutely. That was one of the first, like, you know, classic UFO encounters that I definitely looked at in kind of a more Keelian light. And I mean, it's one of the most intriguing just because of how absolutely bizarre it is. And of course, it was, Hickson and Parker, they were coworkers and also friends fishing off of a pier on the Pascagoula River.
Let's do our break. We'll talk about the Pascagoula case coming up. With Zelia and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
We've entered a time where sky truly is the limit and opportunity awaits. The Internet has become a platform of everyone's worldwide communications. Billionaires building businesses on platforms that didn't even exist a generation ago. But in the sea of noise, how can the voice of your business be heard? The secret is over 100 years old. Radio. 228% more effective than TV. That's 228% more effective than television. Brick and mortar and cyber businesses alike have found radio to be the most effective for building a brand and delivering customers. Learn the secrets of radio advertising by calling 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Ah, he's channeling Kermit the Frog.
My sister will love you for that. She is obsessed with the Muppets, so thank you.
So is my wife.
Yes, the Pascagoula abduction. It's a fantastic case because I do feel like there are so many cases that when you look at them from one angle, they're considered like just the classic. And this is one of the classics of ufology. But then if you look at them in kind of more high strangeness light, you do see how the patterns exist well beyond that. So you have these two men, coworkers and friends, and they were fishing off of a pier in Pascagoula when they saw this light, this bluish light kind of flickering across the water. And suddenly it morphed into this large football-shaped object. This thing, you know, stopped quite like over this old like auto-wrecking type junkyard, which is a fact I'll have to get to in a second here. A door opened in the side of it, and these three beings came out of the object. And these things are incredibly bizarre, even in the annals of many bizarre, you know, creatures. They were described as these grayish, wrinkly things with not really any sort of face as we would understand it. They appeared to have a nose, but only a slit for the eyes and mouth. But they also had a weird protuberance that looked exactly like the nose on either side of the head. And in addition to that, they had these large crab-like claws. So they floated down towards the two men on the pier, who apparently were kind of struck senseless, and proceeded to take them into the craft. Now, the interesting thing here is that the older gentleman, Charles Hickson, remembered his encounter. He claimed that there was this large eye that kind of moved over him in what he believed was some sort of almost medical type examination. Whereas Parker didn't, you know, according to most accounts, didn't really recall what had happened during that time until much later. So after this was over, they were all floated back to the pier and the craft departed. Now, the amazing thing about this, and something that's occurred to me very often when you look at these great close contact encounters, is that oftentimes it seems as though the first occurrence is simply a light or a noise. And the intriguing thing with that is that, you know, you'd think, okay, well, what's the importance of this? Maybe the, you know, the lights are on the craft. That's the first thing they notice. But it's even across the board with some cryptid encounters where people will say that the first thing they noticed was the glowing eyes of the being. So it really seems as though throughout these encounters, light is kind of this, it almost kind of ushers in the encounter.
Now, just to tell our listeners before you go on with this, we had Calvin Parker on the Paracast September 2nd, 2018. This, of course, is regard his book, Pascagoula, The Closest Encounter, My Story, from Flying Disc Press. We then had him on for a return visit, October 6th, 2019. Since then, Calvin's been in ill health. I hope he's a lot better. I haven't heard much from him lately. But Zelia, go on with the story.
Well, the intriguing thing, too, is that Parker then was able to recollect, you know, further events, which had almost, I kind of want to say almost like religious undertones to them, which a lot of these encounters, these, you know, supposed alien abduction type encounters do. Intriguingly enough, though, and this is what I love about so many of these events, is it's like as soon as you pin down one aspect of them and say, okay, well, maybe something truly did happen. You know, these two men saw the same thing. They corroborated each other's story. You know, they had an experience, but maybe it occurred just on like, you know, a non-physical level or an immaterial level, is the fact that in the area, there were other sightings at the time. Shortly thereafter, there was even a sighting of an unidentified submerged object, which appeared to evade these gentlemen as they were boating in the area, and also evaded capture by the Coast Guard when they were called in. So there what did seem to be, you know, just kind of a general air of weirdness at that time in Pascagoula. And even later that week, some miles away, a young boy claimed that he had played with some old gray monster in his backyard. So you have these kind of, again, not necessarily identical, but sort of corroborating type events going on for something that we could try and easily write off as being purely non-physical.
That may be, you know, one of the answers people give to abduction cases in general, that they are not physical encounters, but some kind of experience that is internal to the person who is the experiencer.
Yes, and I don't want to say my problem with that concept, because I think there's a lot of worth to a lot of the theories that kind of go hand in hand with that idea. You know, citing that it seems to have religious or spiritual or folkloric overtones, it may pertain to the collective unconscious. I think there's a lot of worth to that line of reasoning. The problem with that is that, you know, we can't totally pin it in the psychological or, you know, non-physical department, because oftentimes there are physical effects left, or there's also corroborating reports from other witnesses. And that's the intriguing thing to me, is so often it seems as though people really want to make a distinction. They're like, okay, either physically actually happened in a reality we can understand by something that is physical 100% of the time, or it happened in an immaterial, you know, spiritual or psychological sense, and there's no physical reality to it. But the trick is that very often these paranormal events kind of seem to exist at a crossroads. They seem to include both sides of that coin. And so I think that trying to capture that edge may be integral to trying to finally understand some truth about paranormal phenomena.
You know, it always occurs to me when you hear about these abductions, and a lot of them is just one individual, not two people. I'm not thinking in terms of Hickson and Parker and, of course, the Hills. Barney and Betty Hill, but it's a single person, and you wonder if somebody else was there physically at the point in time when this occurred, would they see the same thing or even notice anything was unusual?
Exactly. I mean, and that is the question, because the amazing thing, there's so many ways I want to go with this. The amazing thing is that, you know, when you are dealing, first of all, with shared encounters, and you try and say, okay, well, they were 100% psychological, oftentimes you have people describing either the same thing or something very similar. So if it is a hallucination, then the question has to be, how is the hallucination shared? On the flip side, you also have accounts where people are all observing the same thing that they can objectively see in reality, but they're seeing different things about it. There was this great encounter from the UK where these three boys were actually out, and they were interested in UFOs, and so they had an unofficial kind of UFO hunting group, which, of course, I'm sure that sends off a lot of red flags for any skeptics out there. But just because you're interested in it doesn't mean that it can't happen to you. They were near this disused canal when they saw these strange kind of mist rise up out of it. And so they started to get a little afraid, so they decided to go home. Well, the mist followed them, and it kept following them. And then suddenly, there were lights in the mist. Now, at a certain point, they were just deciding not to look at it. They were just going to try and rush home as fast as possible. Well, finally, they turned around when they were within sight of the house. And two of the boys claimed that they saw an almost Bigfoot-like creature that did not have any legs. It just kind of trailed off almost like a cartoon ghost. And it was holding in clawed hands these two lights. So, of course, if they had been rushing home, they then absolutely just full tilt ran for the house, while the third boy kind of laughed at them and was like, what are you doing? He apparently still just saw the mist and the lights. And so you have these encounters. The Cusack Devils is another great example where two children saw this big luminous sphere and these four imp-like beings in front of it. And there were different details between the two encounters, but for the most part, they corroborated. You know, so there's that question there of how much of this is actually like, you know, some physical, material, objective thing, and how much of it is maybe only perceptible to certain people. And again, why only certain people and not others? That's one of the great questions.
There's a case, I think it took place in South America, where several people, one of the witnesses said that a UFO landed and that he was abducted, while other people there said that it was just a bus that came by and that they were watching their friend just kind of like roll around on the ground. The odd thing is that the ones who saw just a bus said that it came by without any sound and that it had strange lights on it. But they definitely identified it as a bus, while the other witness said it was a UFO that came down and he was, you know, drug inside the craft and then kicked out afterwards.
Oh, that is intriguing. I have not heard that one before.
I'll see if I can locate that and I'll send it to you.
You know, another interesting thing about abduction cases, and you can download these episodes from theparacast.com, but back in 2013, we had an episode of The Paracast, and it was broadcast on June 2nd, featuring Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner. Now, Denise is a psychic, and we can dismiss that, but she was talking about her abduction encounters, and I'll explain most of it possibly in the next segment. But very briefly, during the course of a UFO abduction, she meets somebody from another part of the country, and she, I guess, exchanges information so one can contact the other after this encounter is done. Very important. One can contact the other, two people in different locations. And that's the cliffhanger, folks. We'll continue. We have Zelia Edgar. We have Tim Schwartz and Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.